Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. Today, I have the honor of talking to John Kelvey. John is the founder and CEO of Bespoken. Bespoken is a powerful testing and QA tool for voice and conversational AI. And John has been deeply immersed in the voice ecosystem for quite some time and is a frequent contributor of the community. Welcome, John. Please introduce yourself.
Oh, good afternoon, Roger. It's really nice to talk with you. I am the co-founder and CEO of Bespoken. I started Bespoken about 4.5 years ago, and I've been working with voice for almost 9 years now. So yeah, it's exciting to chat about voice and talk about testing with it.
Yeah, absolutely. As I remember, John, I think you and I first met, if my memory serves me, back in, I think it was January 2018 at the Alexa conference. There was 100 of us or so in the Chattanooga Public Library. Voice seemed pretty small at that point, didn't it?
It did. And I think it's, I don't know, maybe that's a little bit of a through line for this conversation, because I think it's a nice time to sort of reflect on what's changed since 2018. So the folks that I met back then, I'm really pleased to see how many of them are still in the space, see the sort of really amazing projects that people are working on, and just see how it's evolved. I don't think it's all been, I don't know what your expectations were in 2018, Roger. I mean, I probably thought it was going to be like the App Store or something, but it's evolved along its own path. I think some of it's been great, some of it has been not as great, but it's really been cool to go on this ride with other people.
Yeah, I think it was pretty bright-eyed and bushy-tailed back in 2018 about voice. Didn't know quite what the heck was going on and had just started my journey at that point. I'd founded this startup and are trying to build this. We called it WordPress for Voice and are trying to figure it all out. And yeah, high hopes and aspirations. And I look back and I think it will be fun to talk about it because I think some things have come to fruition. Some things have been very different than what we expected back then. And then some things were like, wow, we're still waiting for that? That should have been there years ago. But I think that's the nature of pretty much any industry is successes and failures. But one of the things that I've really loved about the voice community is the community. Back then, it felt like everybody knew everyone, and now it's a lot bigger. But it still feels like a small community to me. There's just a lot of interpersonal communication. A lot of people know each other, and it's a rising tide for everyone. So yeah, there's competition. But we all want voice to succeed. So I think it's a fun community to be in. It's one of the reasons why I really enjoy the voice industry.
Yeah, I think that the relationships that I've made in it, it's watching those grow has definitely been as gratifying as seeing the technology grow.
Got it. Yeah, so let me bring you back. You said so you founded Bespoken about 4 years ago, but you've been in voice for longer than that. Maybe you can tell me, what was your first experience with voice? And was that with a voice assistant or was it pre-voice assistant? And then if it was pre-voice assistant, what was your first experience with a voice assistant?
I mean, to go probably the farthest back, actually, my co-founder asked me to do due diligence on a speech recognition company, which I told him looked awful and not to invest in. And then he talked me into co-founding a voice-based company doing interactive audio ads, which is a company called Zap Media that is still very much around and doing really cool stuff. And we did interactive audio ads that we worked with companies like Spotify and NPR and others, where you'd listen to a song or a podcast. And after it would play, we'd play an ad that would say something like, if you want 2 pizzas for $10, say call now.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, well, we connect you to a pizza place or send you a coupon or send you a discount code. And it's a really cool application. It didn't necessarily achieve escape velocity. I mean, like we still see like Pandora and Spotify are still kind of kicking around the idea of doing this. They haven't really pushed the plunger on it. But it was my introduction to someone really working with speech recognition. And so I was the CTO of that company. And I built a speech recognition system that was basically like a wake word engine, and it was a lot of fun. I thought it worked pretty well, and it really got me immersed in what was involved in building these voice systems. And that in turn is what got me into Bespoken, which is when I saw Alexa and Google Assistant, I was not I was really unsure about the use cases. I'm not sure what you thought about the use cases at the outset. I was like, I would ask it to play a song. But I was really just, I was fascinated, I'd been fascinated by the technology behind it. And then I also just thought, all these developers are going to have to figure out the stuff that I've been doing. And so let me build something to help developers acclimate to this new way of building. And that was really the genesis of Bespoken.
Interesting. Well, I didn't know Zap Media had started with interactive audio advertising, because I think of them as a giant in bringing podcasts to voice assistants now. And I think that feels like their focus, although I know they do a lot more than that. I love what those guys are doing. But yeah, it's interesting. Interactive audio advertising, it still feels like we haven't quite cracked that. It still feels like a great, cool idea, but we still haven't quite figured out how that's all going to work.
Well, one thing that we learned, and I'm interested to see what Spotify does now. Mm-hmm. With the Hey Spotify piece. We had worked with them at the time, and they, without giving anything away, they're hyper-focused on user experience. And they really want to make sure they delivered a great user experience. And whatever they're doing with voice, they didn't want it to be just seen as, here's a way to jam ads down people's throats. Bring a lot of value to users in many ways, not just advertising. And so I think that was, if you're really focused on user experience, that's a big challenge. Right. But now that they have Hey Spotify out there, now there's a lot of utility there for users with the voice. And then two, it does get away from what we saw was a challenge, was just false positives. If you misrecognize somebody on an ad, even if it's at a very, very low rate, and we would measure it very closely, it's still, if you get an email or your phone makes a phone call on your behalf and you did not request it, that's potentially a very negative experience. I will say, to the plus side, Roger, was the response rates from users were just amazing. And voice is an easy way to get people to interact, and it really worked beautifully. It feels like we're at the cusp where they can, maybe we'll kind of figure this out. We'll see.
Yeah, it's interesting. As you're talking, I was thinking, if I was Spotify, I was thinking a cool application would be, I listen to a song and that artist is coming in, coming in concert and advertise that. Maybe Spotify and Ticketmaster should be working. Who knows? Maybe they are. But that would be kind of a cool tie-in where you already got the person who loves the media or listening to the music. Oh, and X is coming in a concert next month around you. Do you want to hear about that? It could be some cool stuff going on there. But we'll have to see. Yeah, I've been interested in a long time, and that's related to that your tests were good, and it feels like we're on the cusp of making that work. So tell me a little bit, you jumped from Zap Media, founded Bespoken. Can you back up a little bit and tell me about, what was your thinking around founding Bespoken? You said you saw a lot of development. It's obviously a tool to help with development, but dive a little deeper for me.
I mean, really around starting it, I really did start with as broad an idea as that. I mean, because we had a few tools that we put out to begin with, some of which were popular, but just very tactical. And then really testing and logging were initially the ones that we were sort of playing with. And then we focused more on the testing, partially because I can tell you that when I was building my own system, I spent 95% of my time testing it. Right. So I knew that was really critical, and it wasn't a surprise that customers demanded that. But then logging, which I really, and another thing that I love, which probably other people don't love that much, but logging, we were just consistently, when we tried to offer people logging, they would see us as a user behavior analytics tool akin to Google Analytics. Which is wonderful and very useful for the space. And there's been some great ones out there, but I did not want to do that because it was not the audience I felt like I could sell to. So we really focus on the testing part. And I think it's definitely taking some time for the market to mature there, but it's a profound need for folks in the voice space.
Great. And one thing that's unique about Bespoken is you are based in Peru. As a matter of fact, as I'm talking to you, middle of the day for me right now, you're in Peru. Has that always been based in Peru? Did you live in Peru before? How did it start up? Why is it in Peru? And how's that gone? Maybe is my question.
There's a long answer to that. The short answer, though, which gets everyone to nod their head, is that my wife is originally from Peru.
Got it.
People look at me and they don't necessarily immediately, perhaps unfairly, they don't think Peruvian. But yeah, we moved here a little bit before we started Bespoken. And I had done some research and I convinced myself that I could build a software company here. And it's been, I think, part of the last few years. It is about the people that you kind of meet along the way and our journey of building a company that's partially based in Peru. I mean, we have folks all over, but our development and engineering is here. It's been a great experience and it's worked out far better and been far easier than I would have expected. I convinced myself I could do it. I was not sure what it was going to be like, but no, it's been great.
Interesting. And so you said your development is in Peru. What's the tech scene like in Peru?
So there's a good tech scene, but there's no startups really. There's very few startups. There's more in Latin America now than there were 10 years ago. And you do have investors, you know, like Andreessen Horowitz has made investments in companies that are here. There's a lot of fintech. There's a lot of delivery tech. Peru, at least, is saturated with people delivering food to people's houses, subsidized. But there's not, I don't think there's as much in Peru in terms of the actual companies being built. Instead, what there is, there's big offshore consultancies here. And so for me, like the nice thing about hiring was I was just going to these consultancies and basically saying, look, you're right now you're being farmed out to some other company and you're basically just a contractor. This is a chance to be a part of a startup. And a startup does not necessarily have a lot of currency. I think it can seem like a little bit of a negative even. But I mean, the idea that you're an integral part of a team, I think that's definitely a differentiator, and it made hiring a lot easier.
Interesting. Yeah, I think there are a lot of companies that have outsourced work to Latin America. And when I was at Gap Inc., we outsourced a lot of work to Brazil. And actually, the beauty of it is, one, the time zone difference isn't so crazy versus some other places that are typically used for outsourcing. And two, I was really impressed with some of the quality of engineers that you get, like some really good technical education in Latin America and some really good dedication. And I think there's a rich pool of tech talent in Latin America that wants to do more than the typical kind of outsourcing work that you're talking about. So there's definitely opportunity down there. So your mascot is a llama. Yeah. And I know Peru and llamas go hand in hand, but is that it? Just Peru, or is there a story behind your mascot?
Actually, when I was starting the company, I was sort of an advisor to us, and he kept pushing me to create a logo, and I was sort of dragging my heels on it. And I think he might have suggested it, or at least he said, why don't you do something with an animal, because you like animals. And so I said, well, we'll do a llama. And that it got me to create a logo, and I think it turned out beautifully. I have definitely an emotional response to it. I really like it. And when we go to conferences, and I think you've probably seen this, Roger, we bring these stuffed llamas for a time. And they're exceedingly popular. Little stuffed llamas are a great business. They really are.
Well, you know what it is, John, when I think about it? I've been at plenty of conferences in my career. And you go there and there's this swag and a lot of it you get and you're like, what did I do? I don't really need this sticker or the coffee cup. But the llama is, one, is cute. And two, if you have kids, you can bring them home something that they'll have fun and play with. They don't want a coffee cup with a company logo on it. But a toy llama, that's pretty cool. So yeah, good job. You are well known for your llamas at conferences, actually.
Well, and they had a really viral quality too, because for example, I traveled to Seattle and the Alexa, whatever was at the time, the Alexa evangelist office there. And they had two or three llamas around the room. And other people, they've shown me that they have them in their office. And it doesn't just have the presence at the conference. It sort of keeps going. It's really pretty amazing.
I can imagine. Actually, it's a good point. Somebody says, where did you get the llama?
Yeah.
Bespoken. Good advertising. It's unique.
It is.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan, and I've worked in the enterprise for many years around robust QA, and I'll call it enterprise true level QA. And it seems to me you are the solution for enterprise QA, not just enterprise, really QA and voice and deep, rich, fully integrated QA and a build pipeline, and we can get into that in voice. But for our listeners who don't know, can you tell me, let's back up a little bit and tell me more about what exactly Bespoken does.
Yeah. So the core of what we do is testing, training, and monitoring for voice. And what that means is the testing side is, I think most people are familiar with it, but it's functional testing, system testing, ensuring the system is doing what it should be. And that's a really important concern. And it's one that if you've been doing web and mobile, perhaps the techniques you're going to use are slightly different, but you know, the outcome is very similar and the goal of what you're trying to do is very similar. The monitoring side, I would say, is kind of the same. If you put an application out there, you want to make sure it's working well. And so we have a really simple way to basically just check on your voice application routinely every 30 minutes, every hour, every day, whatever is the right sort of cadence to make sure that it's really working well. And if it's not, we let you know right away. And that's another essential piece. And as you say, Roger, any enterprise that's out there, it's just a given that they're going to want to adopt these things. And they already, it's sort of a lot of the customers we talk to that are on the enterprise side, they're just like, oh, we're glad we found you. We have it as a requirement to do this sort of automated functional testing or automated monitoring, and you know, you guys slot right in there. The last piece though, the training, I think is the really fascinating part. It's still very much early days for that. But to go back to my experience with the advertising, ensuring people are understood well is just really essential. And I'd say it's taken people a while to come along on that point. The vast majority of our customers are more on the testing and monitoring side. But the training, I think there's more of a, well, there's definitely a realization that it's necessary. And now there's more of a commitment on the part of enterprises to actually do something about it. And it's really about, you're still starting with testing. You're measuring how well the system is performing, measuring how well the AI, the speech recognition, the NLU are performing. And then you go in and you do optimizations. And the optimizations, a lot of times, I mean, they're really very simple. It's with Alexa, Google, Bixby, it's just adding in synonyms. You know, but you can go much deeper than that, and there are advanced techniques. But just doing basic stuff really makes a big difference for users. And that part, I mean, this is what we're waiting for people to really, I guess, to sort of open the floodgates on the testing is when people realize that increasing that understanding really has a big impact on customer satisfaction. Yeah. And we are starting to see that. Nice thing, we're doing more work on the contact center side. And there, you can show people, like, look, people are understood 20% better. You're reducing errors by 50%. That goes right to the bottom line. So there is a much easier case to be made there. And so even if people aren't necessarily really grounded in optimization, all of a sudden they're like, okay, this seems important. It's worth doing. But on the side of sort of independent developers on the pure play platforms, as we kind of refer to them like Bixby, we see more of an interest there too. And one conversation I had recently was with Tom Hewitson, who's somebody who's, I think he's been in this space similar to you and I since sort of the inception. And he said to me that he does think that what we're doing is that we may be onto something because increasing the understanding, he says, increases the user satisfaction more than anything else they do. Any feature, any new release, any bug fix, no, improving that ASR, that's what makes the users happy. And I think people sort of know that, but now we're getting to the point where people are ready to commit to actually acting upon it.
I think Tom Hewitson takes pride in being somewhat all, and apologies, Tom, but I'm going to call you the curmudgeonly critic of the industry because you take pride in that, like of pointing to the BS you see in the industry, and he takes that, and I think, but it doesn't surprise me. Given their success and what they're doing, that they're seeing value in what you're doing. And you're up. And you think about the enterprise, and I came in the mobile and web world, people have these complex build pipelines built out. I think of, I'm a little old school, so I always worked with Jenkins. I know there's some new tools that are probably eclipsed it as far as popularity, but it shows you when I was doing a lot of that, it's expected. So then they go to build voice, and it's, I don't do development without a full-blown build pipeline in place. But I like, you were talking about the training, and it struck me as, yeah, and that's getting more and more important around not only if your voice experience is going to work, you better test the heck out of it. But I also think about diversity and inclusion. And I think a lot about diversity when I think about, you know, we've all seen the YouTube videos that you laugh and then you cringe real hard where somebody has an accent and then they have to change their accent to go and actually have the voice assistant understand them. Well, ha ha. Not so haha, because you're really, you're limiting the amount of people who can use these tools, your applications, to a small subset. And so if voice is going to go global, we're going to need more and more of that. So you guys are in a really good place there, I guess, is my point being there. One of the things, when I think about QA and testing and build pipelines, I think of that, that's a sign, when that's being asked for of a technology, it's a sign of that technology maturing and becoming real. An enterprise saying, yep, this isn't a game anymore. It's not our little QA lab. It's now we're going to bring it in-house. We're actually going to be serious about it. So I'm curious, what industries are you seeing that are really robust customers of what you're doing, which maybe gives us a hint about the industries that are putting a lot more emphasis on a voice presence?
I mean, I think that's a great question, because I start to feel like a VC when we talk to potential customers, because I'm immediately evaluating the use case and going, oh, I don't think that's going to have legs. So we shouldn't spend a lot of time on this one. They're going to, because you've seen this, Roger. I mean, we've had people that come into voice and they do an experiment, and God love them for doing it, but the experiment doesn't work out. And a lot of times they come and go. You know, 3 months later, the project is gone, or maybe 6 months or a year later, but it doesn't last. But a lot of that, I do think, tended to be some of the brand experiences. And I don't know that they were intended to have a lot of longevity, but tasting things or different advisory things that I don't think that they really work that well. But then you see what does work well. I mean, we see media obviously is great. So all the online listening services, and then also, you know, you're starting to see some of the more video-based services, they're picking up steam. Financial services, they really want to have a presence and have a customer service role with people. We see a lot with automotive, obviously. I think everyone believes that automotive, you know, TV and automotive, I mean, take your pick which one is going to have a bigger impact. But those are both, they take time, but they're going to be immense. And then home automation, that's another one where we all have so many gadgets around. Partially it's because of the space I'm in, but we're surrounded by these gadgets, and voice is the way that we interact with them. So those are the ones that have really taken hold. And then we do see new stuff, like one of the companies that's in this Google Accelerator that we're part of is Tiny Chef, that was previously known as Clove Chef. I mean, they call that an industry, I don't know, but you can sort of, you know, the context, I mean, a lot of us talk about context first, how important context is. And the kitchen is a really important context for voice. And so there's someone, you know, is serving that, I think, really well. And there's probably other opportunities there too.
Got it. That struck me. You think the car, the TV, those guys, it's when you think of voice is really obvious for this, right? The car for safety, it's the obvious place to do it. TV, because we still do it, man. Navigating with that little remote and trying to find something is the world's worst UX. So it obviously screams for a voice user interface, but it's interesting as it explores other areas. I love, you mentioned, so Clove Chef is now renamed. What do you call him?
Tiny Chef.
Okay. Yeah. I think I hear a fair amount around that. Actually, we've done some work with a company called Side Chef, and there's all these recipe kind of aggregators, and they kind of get into the home automation side too, because as our appliances get smart, then you start going, okay, well, I have the recipe, but the recipe is like, you got to preheat the oven and it'll do it for you. And you start getting this pretty interesting thing where the kitchen gets awfully smart, and then the voice assistant is your sous chef. I expect that to explode, and I expect to see more. I would expect the big, I don't know, the Williams Sonomas of the world, or the and I'm forgetting some cookware manufacturers, but to come in there and say, hey, you know what? We may sell frying pans, pots and pans, but if we have a voice assistant kind of thing that makes let you use them better, maybe I'll choose this pot and pan because I had such a great voice experience, because otherwise it's a market that can be commoditized easily. So how do you differentiate yourselves? But anyway, we'll see. I'm just conjecturing about that industry. So when I think about voice, John, the first place we probably all experienced voice was IVR, which is basically, it's a three-letter acronym, but it's a four-letter word for a lot of what we think about an IVR. Bang my head, press zero as many times as I can to get the operator. But what I personally noticed is that IVRs are getting better and better, or they're actually, wow, this is actually working. And then I've talked to some people recently, and they're like, you know what, the IVR works is faster and more efficient than actually talking to a human. So, and I know you've been working in that industry a bit. So give me your thoughts around what's happening in the, I'll say, at the customer service, IVR industry, and voice.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's, I wouldn't characterize it as an industry, but I think it's a use case. It's a massive one. I mean, the breadth of it is really incredible. And I'll quote Anthony Passamard, who runs the Google Contact Center AI practice. And he said that conversational, or the contact center, is going to be the first really massive application of AI for end users. And I think that's correct. And the reason I think it's correct is that if we look at the use cases that are succeeding for voice, the ones that are where it's clearly better than mobile, because we all do have the phone with us pretty much all the time. So like the TV is an easy one. Like, you know, I mean, I've tried phone-based TV remotes. It's not satisfying. You want to have something in your hand. Ideally, it's a wake word, but if it's a button, that's great. I mean, they're so much better than the alternative. I mean, they're 10 times better, maybe 100 times better. I mean, it's, we all watch, I mean, I watch a lot of TV, and it's just the natural thing to do. But for other things, I don't know that voice is necessarily 10 times better than a mobile app. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times it's, it may be for some specific features it is, but for other things it can kind of slow you down. With the contact center, you're not trying to beat out a mobile phone. What you're trying to is be better than a human being. And that's two-sided. One, for the user, you want to be better than the human being, which a lot of us would probably rather just talk to somebody. But the other side of it is, for the company, it's very expensive to staff call center. Mm-hmm. So if an AI can, we've seen a lot of these projects, even if it's obviously hybrid strategies are the norm, where some part of it's handled automatically and some part of it is handled by a human. If you can just take some of the low-hanging fruit use cases and get those automated, it's a huge, huge win, ideally for everyone, because it's a huge cost savings. And it's also something where the user, they're not waiting in a queue. Instead, they can get that request knocked out really fast. And it's obviously, it's AI. I mean, it's voice, it's natural language understanding. The users don't, they're not seeking out AI, but it's easily the best possible solution for that problem. So we're obviously really bullish on it. We as a business, in terms of our work and our activity, we spend equal amounts of time between contact center, physical devices, and like third-party app type things on, you know, Lexa and Bixby and whatnot. But marketing-wise, we are focused on the contact center because it, I mean, it just looks like a tsunami that's coming. Maybe it'll miss, but we're excited about it, and it seems like the whole industry is as well.
Yeah, well, I think there's some real dollars and cents there. The business case there, it's funny, when you're talking, I used to work for Gap Inc., and I did a lot of omni-channel work, and then I did a little bit on fulfillment side. And you got, those call centers are really, I don't know, a call was like $12 or $13 of average call if that got through to a human. That's a lot of dollars, right? If you can automate that. And at that point, IVRs were, you wanted to get out of it as soon as possible, but you can take the voice technology that we have today and let you answer a lot of the, most of the things coming in a call center are simple queries. So you can take away that 90 or 80-90% and have a good customer experience with an AI. And then the 10 or 20%, I don't know, I'm throwing out percentages that I'm not sure what they are, but to a human, you cut a lot of costs. And frankly, the AI is really efficient and fast and quick. And I have a fast, quick question, maybe it can be better than a human. And a human will be the complicated stuff, or I have this giant complaint, or I want to place this order and change 12 things, which probably an AI, our AIs are not quite at that level there. So maybe they will be, but yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And I think it's where there's an obvious business case for it, and done, it's an obvious benefit to the consumer too, to get quick, fast answers to their simple questions when they got to call in. So speaking about industries, we haven't talked about healthcare. And we just saw Microsoft, that giant, what was a $19 billion acquisition of Nuance. And at least the way the media is reporting it, it was all about healthcare. Now, I think there's some other things going on there. But what is your view of that acquisition? And maybe the corollary question is voice and healthcare. And what's your view of that?
Well, I thought it was just brilliant. Microsoft, it's unclear how they've been positioning themselves. I mean, they obviously have great technology for AI, but they sort of had this false start with Cortana. You know, Azure, they're rolling out that offering, but on the contact center side, it's still not really there. They don't have an IVR type system that's equivalent to a Dialogflow CX or an Amazon Connect. And so Amazon and Google that have been really pushing, I think very hard, have very aggressive go-to-market strategies. I think Microsoft just sort of leapfrogged them with that acquisition. I don't know Nuance's book of business as well as others. I know healthcare is a big part of it. I know IVR is a big part of it. And massive customers for both of those. And it's just, to me, they can just keep those customers alive on the platform. And then when they're ready, bring them over to the Azure offering. And, you know, they're guaranteed, I think, a book of business there that really ensures that they will be right at the top, if not the top, for the next 10 years in a market segment that obviously the $20 billion, what was that? That was number two after LinkedIn in terms of acquisition. I mean, the fact that they paid more for Nuance than GitHub, which, I mean, GitHub is nearly invaluable.
Yes, it is.
If you're one of these tech companies, I think it says a lot about how they valued it and what the type of revenue they're expecting. I think
Microsoft has always been so good at the enterprise. I've known that for years. We all know, as consumers, we all know them, love them, hate them, whatever. And consumer products like Xbox, and we all use Office products, and many of us use Windows. But really, their bread and butter has always been the enterprise. So I see that it's a big enterprise play. And how many of their customers are using Office 365? And now somebody's like, oh, I'm wondering voice into the enterprise. Because I hear a lot about that. B2B applications for voice. As a matter of fact, to my mind, the real money is there right now, right? B2C is sexy and fun and interesting to talk about, but really a hard slog. The B2B side is where there's probably some, and IVR being a great low-hanging fruit example of that, but probably where there's really some money to be made. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that acquisition.
Well, I think healthcare is a long slog. Like, I can, for Bespoken, we have some great customers in healthcare. A State Farm with their Sundial Labs is one of them that I would highlight. But in general, what we've done in healthcare, it's not, you know, we haven't made quite as many advancements there as a company. And what we have done, like early on, it was like we did some stuff with insurance companies where it's like giving you advice on how to exercise. Mm-hmm. And it's, I've done some stuff in the healthcare space. You probably have too, Roger. The reputation, it's very slow. It comes along. It's not going to be the first one out of the gate, but it's big dollars. And once it's in place, it's extraordinarily lucrative. And that's kind of my impression of what's happening. And I think companies like Orbit, I don't know if you've had Nate on, but I get to talk to him every once in a while. I mean, where they sit in the market, it seems like there's a lot of exciting stuff happening with healthcare, but it just takes a good amount of time.
Yeah. What a great description of the healthcare industry. A lot of exciting stuff happening, and it takes a long time because it's a hard slog. And I do know Nate in Orbita, and anybody in healthcare, I'm like, wow, there's gold at the end of that rainbow. But man, getting to that end of the rainbow is going to be quite the slog. So, not only the industry itself, but just the regulatory frameworks around it, right, are incredibly challenging. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. So another thing, big thing that's happened on voice is integrating voice into mobile apps, right? So we saw Snapchat do it, playing around with it. I think you can choose your filters of voice, really simplistic. But we were just earlier talking about Spotify and building a voice assistant there. I personally am very bullish about it. It was a prediction I made in the VoiceBot AI for this year. I said voice in the apps is my number one prediction. I'm curious about your thoughts around voice being brought into apps. What's going on there?
I'm delighted by it because I'm happy to see people investing in voice. I've worked with Spotify, as I mentioned before. And so I have a lot of admiration for that team. And actually, they're a current customer of ours too. So is this really an end state technology, or is this some sort of bridge, what they're doing? I guess that's maybe the way to say it. Because I, like Erica and Hey Spotify are two implementations, Erica from Bank of America, that I really admire both the user experience and, you know, the technical chops that went into it. But I'm not, like, Bank of America, I'm a customer. I know that mobile app inside and out, so maybe I'm not the right person. I'm in that mobile app probably every other day. And I don't use the voice because I can find my way around and get what I need done. Spotify is probably somewhat similar, though for searching for song names, I think that's helpful. But I guess overall, I see these things as sort of OS level features, and that's where I see this intermediate technology, because hey, Spotify today, it only works when you're in the app. That's a pretty big limitation. And from what I know, having built speech recognition in mobile apps, that's not going to be easily overcome. I mean, either technically or probably more importantly, policy-wise. I mean, Apple's not going to say, oh, just listen to people all the time. Sure, your app can do that. And, oh, five other apps. Go ahead. Right. You know, as long as the user clicks yes, just listen all the time. It's not going to happen. And that sort of deteriorates the experience in my mind. So I see it as something that is in transitional technology to where it gets, ideally, you're leveraging OS level features to do that, but it doesn't feel as third party-ish. I mean, I think one of the complaints around the big guys like yourself is that third parties feel like an afterthought. I'd say less so with Bixby, but nonetheless, it does feel like an unequal playing field. So I guess we'll see. I mean, I'll be interested to see what the usage is like and where it evolves to.
Yeah, it's interesting. I agree with you. I think it is a bridging technology. The way I look at it, it's a little bit necessary because one of the problems I feel with voice is I can type, I can swipe. That's a first-class modality with my devices. But there's a bunch of things I'm sitting in front of my MacBook right now, whereas we're talking. Okay, there's Siri, but it really doesn't do anything. I don't think about talking to my PC. I don't think about talking to mobile apps. So it's kind of an adjunct modality right now. So in order for us to be able to really unlock voice, maybe we need to get used to talking to a lot of things. And maybe that bridging thing is there's a bunch of little voice assistants built into all these apps. And I will predict, and I'll take my corporate hat off to do this, right, for who I work for, but I think this is going to put a lot of pressure on. If there's a bunch of voice assistants that are purpose-built, I think it's going to put a lot of pressure on the big players to open their platforms up. Because I'll just pick on Apple. If I'm a Spotify or a B of A or that, and I'm a customer on an iPhone, why can't I leverage Siri to actually do that, or at least the underlying mechanics, but have the freedom to control it in a way that's very branded to what B of A wants to do or Spotify wants to do? I think it's part of the evolution, and it's going to come, and it's going to force the big players to open their platforms up. And I actually think that's going to be really good for the industry. And maybe it's a necessary thing to have a million voice assistants before we collapse down and go, that's insane. Maybe we need fewer, but more full-featured ones that are more flexible and open. But we'll see. Who knows?
I mean, to me, a synthesis is that you sort of divide up, like, what are the operating system features and what are the application level?
Right.
Right now, there is a sorting, but it's not balanced. And I think that I do agree Spotify is putting pressure, as you said, Roger, on those companies to be like, look, people want this. There's a demand for it. Don't make them say, okay, Google, talk to Spotify. That's not
right.
This is going to kind of annoy people. Make them a first-class citizen. There's technical challenges, but I think a lot of us that are outside of the big guys perceive it as they're saving the best stuff for themselves.
Yeah, and I think the industry will put pressure on them to change it and open it up. And we've seen it happen before. I think of the web in the mid-90s, Microsoft, very different company then. Now, they kind of tried to close it up, right, with IE and chose up. And then Mozilla and eventually Chrome came along, kind of forced their hand on opening up. So we'll see what happens. But it'll be an interesting journey along the way. That's for sure. So I have to go back. And you built a whole startup around testing in QA. And despite enormous value, let's say that's not what rolls off a lot of founders' lips is, I'm going to build a QA company. Even though it's so critically important, it's often seen as, I'll call it less sexy. But you clearly have a passion for QA and testing. And where did this come from?
I like that question. I really like DevOps. And mm-hmm. I guess an analogy I would go to, and I apologize for using a sports analogy, but it is what comes to mind, is to me, DevOps and testing is like rebounding in basketball. Mm-hmm. And I was a good rebounder too. I was pretty good at defending and rebounding. I wasn't necessarily a great shooter or anything else.
So you're the Draymond Green of your basketball team?
Yeah, the JV basketball team.
Yeah.
I didn't get too far in my basketball career, but I was pretty good at rebounding. And, you know, there were statisticians have since come out. They have like Moneyball for basketball, and they show rebounding is just, it's the thing that wins. And like, for example, Kawhi Leonard, when he was coming out of college, my favorite statistician said, this guy is going to be one of the best players in the game. And he was. And it's because there's many reasons, but really the most prominent one is he's an incredibly effective rebounder. Mm. And it's not sexy, but it's what wins. And I think when you're talking about user experience and quality, DevOps and testing is what wins. And it's the glitzy design, elegant design is great. But I think of that as like a 3-point shot, which obviously important for winning. But the DevOps and testing, that's really the thing that predicts success. Mm-hmm. Is your ability to really build something industrial strength, high quality. That's what really keeps users coming back. I think it's some tendency on my own to gravitate towards that. I've done a lot of different stuff in my career, but I've always been on that DevOps side. And it is, I guess, the pitch I'll make for it, because I don't think it's for everyone. I am amazed as we work with customers, the limited DevOps resources they tend to have. It's gotten, like you mentioned, Jenkins, Roger, it's gotten a lot better since Jenkins. Stuff like GitHub mm-hmm. Actions is just, it's magnificent. And it's really democratized it. That if you are someone, you're a developer that's listening to this and you're wondering whether or not you want to waste or spend your time on CI, it's a lot better than when you're using Jenkins. So you might take another look at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a whole industry that's built up around that tools around that. I'd say it's actually pretty sexy stuff and pretty well paid, actually, DevOps right now. So, yeah, if you're a developer, don't ignore it, actually. It's a pretty good place to be there because of that lack. There really is still a lack of people who are deep experts in that, right?
And some of the... look at the understaffing we see. If you're a front-end developer and you want to differentiate yourself, do DevOps. Every single company you talk to has, like, an opening. And even when they fill it, it seems like the guy leaves 2 months later. You get that on your resume if you enjoy doing back-end work. It's well-paid, in demand, and it's fun.
So you said beyond Jenkins, what tools would you... So I also think of like Chef and Puppet and those kind of tools of DevOps. I'll ask you, if you were a front-end developer, they're like, it's a Me Too industry, right? There's a million of me. What kind of tech should I learn? Where would you point them? Into any thoughts around that?
Actions is absolutely number one. I think that is just a brilliant ecosystem, because what they did is they sort of brought a marketplace app store approach to DevOps. So it's mm-hmm. not just your typical sort of automated workflows. It's actually this complete pluggable architecture. And it's amazing what can be done there. And then I think the corollary tools we're always using, things like Datadog, things like Splunk, you get all your reporting, analytics, that stuff. I think it's a little bit adjacent, but it's really helpful to get familiar with those tools as well, the sort of monitoring ecosystem.
Hey, John, I want to change topics a little bit and ask you, I work for Samsung. One of the things we do with Samsung is we think about we're bringing voice to products that aren't voice first. And what I mean by that is we're putting voice in a TV or an appliance or clearly in a phone. But devices, I might go buy a TV, as I like to say, because I'm going to go watch the Super Bowl, buy this 65-inch TV, and I'm all excited about it. And I didn't even know it had voice. And then I could bring it home and I'm like, oh, wow. Oh, that's kind of cool. I could talk to my TV. And so one of our goals is there might be a whole set of consumers. Maybe they're never going to buy a smart speaker. They're not ready yet. But they're certainly going to go buy their big TV to watch the Super Bowl. And then they discover voice and they're like, wow, that's a cool way of interacting. I never thought of that. It's a different tactic. Is voice enabling devices that consumers buy anyway. And I just want to get your thoughts around what we're doing.
The TV is, talking to people, the car is the one I think a lot of people focus on because the car, sure. It's not just that voice is better, it's unsafe to do anything else. So there's a carrot and a stick there. Like you should probably be arrested if you're holding it. Talking, but the TV is going to come faster. I mean, I really hope, and I'm sure you have better insight on this than I do, but I hope it's a selling point. I mean, to me, any new TV should have voice. I think it's table stakes for smart TVs. And I would think consumers, I mean, I'm certainly one of them, but I don't think I'm alone. I don't think it's just because I work in the space. I mean, once you, I'll pick on like Xfinity, which I don't think is known traditionally for being a great technology company. Mm-hmm. I don't have it here, but I visit my parents. They have the Xfinity remote. It's a dream. It's worked so great. Search your TV, you search your movies, you just press a button. It's got a nice feel to it. It's a little clunky, but it's got a good hand feel, I guess. And it just works beautifully. And once you get used to that, I visit my folks every summer. It's a little bit of a letdown, the other experiences. Yeah. And it's not to say there's lots of stuff on the market, but like we have LG TVs here that are just a little behind, and the voice experience is not good. So I hope you guys are pushing a lot of TVs onto the market. I think, as you quote Tom Hewitt again, and he can't wait to get his games onto TVs. He thinks that's where they can really go from being like, I think those guys are successful companies now, but maybe turn into breakout companies if folks like you at Samsung can sell a lot of these voice-enabled TVs because it's a fantastic use case. I mean, it's one of the best applications of voice.
Yeah, I agree. Not only are you right for control, and I do not have Xfinity. I'm all streaming. I use YouTube TV for my TV. But yeah, I've heard great things about them. And you're right, I'm very bullish about voice in the TV for gaming. Because think about it, people have their Xbox, right, or their PlayStation, and that's not quite a voice, but they use that as a center of entertainment. Now, what if you could voice enable that and do some really interesting things around a voice enabled TV? I share that with Tom. I could get on my own soapbox about the opportunities of TV, but I agree with you. It's probably one of the most fertile grounds. And maybe one of the most frustrating places that hasn't moved as fast as it seems so obvious once you've seen it work. You're like, why isn't everyone doing this? Maybe it's we just need more people to see it work. But yeah, here's the voice in the TV, shall we say. So one question I always like to ask guests, and I call it my hidden gem question, is what's a voice or an audio experience, so it could be a podcast as well, that you really enjoy, that you think more people need to discover, the hidden gem, so to speak?
I would say Tiny Chef is the one I would cite. I'm very familiar with them because we have been doing this accelerator with those guys. But I think they have a great recipe experience. I think it's a great application of voice. I think it is. It's one of the core use cases for it in the kitchen. And I liked what you said before, Roger, because you kind of, I sort of joke like, it was a big recipe, but I think between the appliances and the recipes and some videos and entertainment, I mean, the kitchen, it does start to look like a little mini industry and lots of opportunity there. And I think those guys are doing a great job. There's a lot of bigger names there, but they're not necessarily, I think that they maybe are struggling or not capitalizing on the opportunity that's in front of them. So I think that's something, Tiny Chef is something people should check out. I think it's a really cool voice experience. And I mean, we all cook, especially now.
That's right.
It's really timely. I think it's something that you can get utility out of today.
Awesome. Tiny Chef. Yeah, I actually didn't know they'd renamed from Close Chef. I know the Close Chef guys and that, and they are doing some cool stuff. So people should definitely check that out. All right. So it's crystal ball time. So first, I want to take out the short-term crystal ball question. What's your 2021-ish or next year prediction for voice?
So my hope, I mean, to the conversation around the TV, I really hope you all and other people sell a ton of TVs with great voice experiences. Because if it's got a good voice experience when people turn it on, they're going to be hooked. That's my opinion. You just got to give it to people. And I haven't looked at stats on manufacturing of TVs, but it seems quite plausible to me that there'll be a lot of TVs coming that will be sold through the end of the year and especially around the holidays that could really move the needle on that and really get people hooked on voice in a way that they hadn't been before.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're definitely still in some early minority or early majority kind of where voice is with smart speakers and that. And I think you're right. Maybe if we're going to get into that majority, further in that bell curve, you probably need a device like the TV to be a great voice experience to do that, is the way I look at it. So I love that prediction, and I'm a fan of that too. So let's make that happen. How about a little bit longer term? 5, 10 years. Now you're really looking at crystal ball. Where are we going to be with voice?
First of all, I think in terms of making predictions, I haven't gone back and audited mine, but I don't know that I'm really good at predicting things.
Okay. Well, I also tell my guests, sorry to interject, that in 5 or 10 years, we're all going to get together and have a drink and then laugh at all of our bad predictions and celebrate the few that we got right. So don't worry about it.
My number one hope is that, you know, you and I, Roger, and a lot of the other folks that we come in with in 5 years, we'll be getting together to talk about the progress that we've seen and the surprises as well as the things that maybe went according to plan. But overall, just that this ecosystem continues to kind of grow and flourish in the way that it has. That's a kind of a soft prediction, but kind of a Weasley one. But that's one thing I would really like to see. But then my maybe slightly more ambitious prediction, though I think it's still kind of on the obvious side, is really that I do think that conversational AI and NLP, I mean, they're having a moment now. We're not on the research side, but the research, the innovations that are coming out of that are incredible. I mean, we've all seen GPT-3. I don't think we necessarily know what to make of it or what its impact is going to be, but it looks, you know, it looks like the thing that we sort of, I guess AI was going to be when we were kids. That's how I kind of
think
of it. It really sort of is one of the first things I've seen that really feels like that. And so that is natural language processing. And so I think that medium or that platform will become the dominant interface in the next 5 to 10 years. And I think if I was putting a number on, I would say it's probably closer to 7. Usually things take longer, so probably it's 10, right, unfortunately. Right. But it is happening, and maybe it's going to start with a contact center. But I do think then, you know, I don't think we're far away from when we're talking to the TV, talking to the computer, talking to our cars, which that's just a supply chain thing, right? I mean, we're going to talk to our cars. It's just how long does it take to get those models out there? So I do believe in that. And then obviously that's why we're in this space, because we see the potential for voice and natural language is just absolutely immense.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a great prediction. Yeah, I agree. You look at things like GPT-3, and I'm not sure what to make of that too, except it's super cool. And it does point to kind of maybe a Jetson-like future where you truly get like some truly interesting insight there, even though it's flawed around the edges, but it's cool to see stuff like that. It gets you excited for where things are going. Even if people are still figuring out what the heck to do with it now, but it's exciting to see it out there.
So one of the questions people almost always ask us is, can you generate test data for us? Our answer is almost, it's no. I mean, we can use crowdsourcing to do it, but we don't have a programmatic way that I've ever seen to generate test data. There's already companies now that have put out there use GPT-3 to generate test data. And it's not, is it as good as putting your application into production in terms of seeing what people will say? No, or actually I haven't used it that much, but I don't think it will be. But it's better than, you and I are both programmers on this. You come up with 5 or 10 phrases.
Yeah.
It's definitely going to be better than that, right?
I mean,
it's amazing. And like, okay, wow, now you've got a way to come up with some test data that can help you, you know, get kind of a head start so you're not just testing in production. So at least, I mean, that might not seem like a big deal to people, but it's a big challenge for everyone working in the space. And
hey, man, your QA is only as good as your test data, right? I mean, so you can have the best tools in the world. If you don't have good test data, it's hard to succeed. So I hadn't thought of that. That's a great use case for it and something it should be pretty decent at. Yeah, I love that. All right. Well, listen, John, if people want to keep in contact with you and or what Bespoken is doing, what's the best way to do so?
Our website is bespoken.io. My email is jpk@bespoken.io. And I'm also on Twitter, jpkbst.
You know, awesome.
I'm very open, so feel free to reach out.
Great. And I will make sure to put all those in the show notes. Hey, John, been a lot of fun. Been a pleasure. I'm a fan of you and QA tools and automation because I see it as the industry really maturing. And so seeing you guys succeed is really indicative of the voice industry doing well. And you have such great insight. So thanks, man. I've known you for many years and I was excited to have you on today. And it's been super fun and a pleasure to have you on the show. So thanks a lot for being on the podcast.
Well, thanks a lot, Roger, and I'm a big fan of yours as well, and also what you all do at Bixby. So, yeah.
All right. Well, great. That's all, folks. Till next time, this is Roger Kibbe of the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast signing off.